Pete, I'm done running.
My sacred mission is to create the perfect society.
I'm gonna tell you something. We were gone for quite a while. But no matter what happens next, the galaxy still needs its guardians. Are you ready? For one last ride?
Don't forget where we came from.
He didn't want to make things perfect.
Da 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 da!
You sound insane. You realize that?
Yeah.
The whole world got crazy. Are you
serious?
It's showtime.
Hey, what's up? We got more MCU talk here on MAM. Welcome back. I'm Kent to lead us through this one. Guardians Volume 3, the end of the Guardians series, we think. The end of the James Gunn Guardians series. Yeah. We know. We'll talk about all that on this episode of Mad About Movies. Welcome in. I'm joined by Brian and Richard. Fellas, how we doing? We're only a few days away now from Fast X.
It's family time.
I saw Vin showed up at the F1 race and did this long intro for the F1 race where it's like,
F1's all about family.
Literally said that. He said he lives his life one race at a time, though. So there might be some controversy over
a quarter mile
at a time. Might have to get some clarity from Vin on that.
Well, that, if you say that, you can get real Proud Boys pretty quick.
Yeah.
If you don't,
That can get misconstrued really bad.
Yeah.
But there was a picture that was snapped of, I believe it was Tom Cruise and Vin together. Can we make that happen?
Cross the streams, baby. Yeah.
We shoot them both of them to space at the same time?
Yeah. That would be great if Tom...
Tom needs to be a villain in Fast. I think that would be like awesome.
That, or he's just... We don't explain it.
But another brother of Dom.
No, he's just O'Connor now. O'Connor's back.
I think we would have to explain that.
They just treat him exactly like Paul Walker, but it's just Tom Cruise. Like, all right, cool.
I like it. It's a good idea.
Maybe O'Connor's brother.
Yeah, or he's just like, yeah, I had to disappear for a while. I got some work done.
But O'Connor's still alive. Yeah. And
see you. That's what I'm saying. He got some work done, and they play see you again, and it's just Tom Cruise, and he parachutes in. I'm in.
He had to get some work done to avoid, you know, like he's in WITSEC, so he had to get a little work done. Yeah, I like
it. He decided he wanted to look like the guy from Cocktail growing up. They just don't talk about anything Tom Cruise did post, like, 1993. He's like, you look good. He's like, yeah.
I like this.
I'm going to go drive this this Porsche off Old Trafford. He's like, okay.
Looks like we've got another 10 days or so of dominance from Guardians at the box office before Fast X comes out here at the end of May. Mm. Guardians won the weekend. Last weekend, Mario Brothers still some kind of an audience out there for it. That's the family audience out there.
Pratt's trying to see if he can get Jurassic Park out before.
Yeah, it is. Can they get one out? Can we get a Mouse Rat movie out ASAP?
I fell into the pit, the movie.
bye, little. I love Mouse Rat, one of the greatest fictional rock bands ever.
It's
just
really
under
funny.
The wonders, but
it's such a good otherwise. Joke that bit of that kind of loser, stoner, you know, slacker guy. You could do a lot of funny bits that are less funny of bands he'd want to be. Like, you know, he could want to be a metal guy or like a bad rap or whatever. The fact that he just loves Dave Matthews Band is such a funny, like specific to that exact age that he is kind of guy. Like, we all know that guy.
Yeah.
I love it.
I just finished a Parks rewatch and
it's been a while.
I don't know that it's ever going to get old, man. It's still so funny.
It's such a great last season, too. Yeah. It's like the opposite of a lot of shows.
Right.
It ends so well, I think.
Those last three seasons like feel more relevant and prescient in some ways than they did at the time.
Like, that one feels the most
Bonnie
likely.
Was ahead of the rest of America.
Yeah.
That one feels the most likely to do another season of a lot of these, of the 30 Rocks, The Office, Community, sure. all those. I think Community's trying to do a movie, but it's gotten sidelined by the writer strike again, so that's cursed. But
And you never know. Dan Harmon could creep someone out again at any moment.
Yeah, at any point.
Amy Poehler popped up as Leslie Knope on SNL recently. We had April Ludgate. You know, I think Offerman would
Poehler's
be down.
The easy one to get, surprisingly, now. Yeah. Like, it's kind of the opposite of maybe The Office or something. Like, right? Like, you could probably get Poehler.
Yeah. Oh, for
but
sure.
Aubrey Plaza and even Pratt, even Adam Scott is tough.
Oh, yeah.
Right. Yeah.
There you
He's
go.
Doing the party down thing again, so I think he'd probably come back for it. But
he probably I'm with Rob you. Lowe's working. Right. He's trying to, you know, he's getting Rui and all those guys together. So he's busy. You know,
he's done a heck of a job restructuring the Lakers this year on the fly. You know,
on the fly. I'd
Adam
kill
Scott's
for, I mean,
got
I'd kill
a
kill for Rob Lowe over Mark Cuban.
Got a PGA tour to
that's
to be
true.
That's true.
Competing in too. So
and that stupid Potter
very busy.
Gosh.
We'll make
Adam
more
Scott,
money
the golfer, weird golf tangent I'm going to go on. We never do this on the show, so I'll keep it 10 seconds. But such a cool looking dude, and he has the dumbest putter. He's one of those guys that putts like up to his chest. One of those weird. Is there anything less cool than that in sports? You hit a great iron
maybe
shot.
Just playing.
I like the long putter. I like the long putter. I'm
a
fan.
Not a cool look.
I thought it
you
was
a cool
great
iron
way
shot,
to undermine the rules without breaking
them. You're Australian. And then you bring out this weird crutch looking thing that goes up to like your Adam's apple and putt. Like, you look like such a dork.
Love the Lauren Roberts putter.
I mean, it's cool if you're like a fat guy, but like, you're Adam Scott. Like, you should just putt.
That's true.
Like, if Tiger pulled that thing out.
Yeah, it's only badass if you are good at it. If you pull that thing out and you're just missing everything still, that's bad. It only is awesome if you're making every putt. That is one of the funnier bits Adam Scott does, is every time Adam Scott wins a PGA Tour tournament, he just takes credit for it on Twitter. Yeah, he's like, God, I just want to thank my fans, just retweeting everybody that's tagging him, not knowing it's the actor. That's awesome.
All
right.
That REM podcast he had for a while. That's a deep cut.
That
he had
is.
Like an REM album.
REM Remy? Was what it was called? Well, Scott Aukerman, I believe, was on that one. Believe it or not, as many things as Chris Pratt has done, I think Parks and Rec is still my favorite role of his.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
This Star-Lord role, though,
it's up there.
Might be up there. I mean, I know there's an audience for the Jurassic stuff, but
is there
this Guardians series has resonated for sure with audiences. This most recent one, $118 million opening weekend, less than Guardians Volume 2, but more than Guardians of the Galaxy. Almost $30 million more than Guardians of the Galaxy, but cost $80 million more than Guardians of the Galaxy did. So they got a lot more ground to make up in terms of the investment that they've made in this one, but I think they'll be fine at the end of the day. They've already made $300 million worldwide, so they've broken into the green. And I don't know if that's a disappointment, Brian. Where do you fall on Guardians 3 making less opening weekend than Guardians 2.
Yeah, it's got to be a bit of a disappointment. I was a little surprised, honestly. I don't ever have trouble getting tickets to a movie, you know? Like, the pre-sale thing I've never done except for like Force Awakens. Cuz we live in DFW. There's 50 theaters, you know, within 10 or 15 miles of me, and so usually it's not a big deal. So we had trouble getting tickets, and ended up at kind of a dinky theater that I wasn't super impressed with. But so I kind of assumed that, I mean, that's a little bit anecdotal, but when you see all the buzz around it and it was getting good ratings and whatnot, and then you start having trouble getting tickets. I thought this was going to be something closer to like 150 million opening weekend. And, so yeah, I imagine Disney's kind of disappointed with 118 and what's it worldwide? I'm pulling it up now. Like, yeah,
318 or something like that. Yeah,
I mean, that's not bad at all, but I definitely think it is indicative of like if you're Iger on Monday, you're saying, all right, guys, like this kind of proves the point of less might be more on this. Like, we've probably reached a saturation point where maybe we need to we need to rein back how many movies we're doing and all this sort of stuff. Because
just take like 2 years off.
Yeah, I would say that's the thing I would do.
Like, let everything that's in production keep making it, and then like everything that's not is on an 18-month delay.
Well, to to counter that, this is the first Guardians movie since 2017, so it's been a long time since they've done Guardians, and they probably feel like we just need to get this out. Like, we can't keep, and especially with James Gunn out the door at this point.
Yeah, he's I don't mean to shelve this one. I'm just saying whatever they're working on that's supposed to come out in like 2026, go ahead and just make that.
Yeah, maybe the writer's strike could be a blessing. You know,
yeah, like, that's a great.
I was talking to somebody when I was out of town last week. We were all talking about Marvel movies and do you watch them and all that. And somebody brought up the point, like, Marvel needs to just go dark for like 5 years straight and not release anything. I was like, that's actually genius.
They'd create
and just create such a huge demand for nostalgia for the original stuff and like wanting new stuff. So I think that might actually be the smartest thing to do. Like, if they're playing this for like the 20-year game instead of like the 5 to 8 year game, maybe that's the strategy.
Yeah. I mean, but I think that, you know, their revenue generating, Star Wars they're is all doing profitable. It. Yeah. They're all, Star Wars took a little break, but these are such revenue drivers for them. It pays for everything else. You know, you even think about something like Ant-Man and Listomania or whatever. It was not successful, right, in terms of Marvel thing, but it still made $150 million in profit. And so, like, shareholders don't really care as much about fatigue, maybe, if it's continually profitable.
Yeah, no, that's definitely true.
But to their point, they probably would care if it's like hurting future profitability. I don't know. Mm-hmm. There's definitely a tightrope there to walk. But they're in a weird spot right now. It's not like the quality of these have been, especially this one, is not bad by any means. It just,
this was higher quality than
TV shows really hurt them.
I think so too. They probably need to take a hard look at that. But I think the most concerning thing, if you're Marvel, Disney, looking back at this, is the fact that Doctor Strange made way more than this, almost 70 million more than this opening weekend. Yeah. Yeah. And I thought that Guardians was a more well-liked property. I thought more people would be excited for this. I thought it had more pop culture relevance, all that kind of stuff, more relevance in the MCU, all the kind of stuff you would want for this. Did Doctor Strange break people? Did everyone just go to that movie and it's like, I don't know what this is. I can't anymore. And the last few movies seem to have suffered similar fates. They all haven't been as successful as we had anticipated. That would be the most discouraging for me, is that we had a character that we thought was just like in kind of a throwaway, we have to do this kind of movie, make way more than something you think has true potential to be a good movie and, you know, have legs, all the kind of stuff. But
I think and then people, Brian, sorry, I'm not trying to cut you off.
No,
you
can go.
Let you cook. This is your world more than mine, but like, I do think, I mean, we touched on it, but like, people are like, maybe not necessarily watching the shows as much. I mean, they're probably watching them in good numbers compared to most streaming shows. I'm not saying that, but like, they're aware of them. And I think people just assume they're behind now. Like, oh man, you know what?
Yeah.
I think there's a big part. I would go see Guardians, but like, I didn't see Loki, and I watched the first two, and then my kid had soccer, and so I'm not, you know, I'll catch up later. Like, it's like kicking the can. And the next thing you know, the assumption is these people have 40 hours of stuff to catch up on. And they're just like, you know what? I'll just watch The Good Doctor and move on with my life. And, I think that's been really damaging to them in ways that certainly, by the way, I don't even mean to dunk on Disney for it. Or Marvel, I could probably didn't predict that. Like, I thought, I mean, I whined about it, that, you know, there'd be, okay, they used to ask for 9 hours of my life a year, and now they're asking for 60. I made that joke a million times. But like, I didn't think it would be like necessarily hugely damaging to their box office returns, but I think it's a huge culprit.
Yeah, I think that's a big player. And I think you're right. Yeah, I think you're onto something with the feeling of, oh crap, I didn't watch this thing. We sat down to watch this. A couple of my friends came to watch with me and Coop. And right as the movie started, my buddy was there, was like, oh crap, I never saw Thor, Love and Thunder. Is that going to be a deal right here? Like, and I was like, and what's funny about that is like, this guy, my buddy Daniel and I have been friends. Yeah, we've been friends since he was, since we were like 6 years old. And he, for the first like 10 plus years of this Marvel thing, he would be the guy that like we'd go together, all of us, you know, big group of friends, and whatever the weird like post-credit scene was that's like teasing something that you don't understand what's going to be, the whole row would then look at him and be like, all right, what does that mean? Because right, he's super comic book guy. And for him to not only to have skipped Thor 11th, and I mean, look, it's not like he was like, ah, screw that, I'm not watching it. It's, I'm an adult and I work all the time, you know, that kind of thing. He, for him to not only have not seen it, but not even realize, oh, right, I forgot that's a part of this until the moment that the movie starts, I think was, for me, that was kind of a little bit glass shattering. Like, oh, crap, like this is legitimately, again, that's anecdotal, but that, if that is something that's transpiring to people, then goodness, this could be a really, really rough thing. People didn't like Thor. People that did see Thor and Love and Thunder didn't like it. I am still fine with it. Ant-Man kind of the same way. But like, I think the biggest shot, I think maybe you already said this, Kent, so I'll just very quickly, like, I think the three biggest parts of this whole thing at this point are Spider-Man, Black Panther, and Guardians. And that would be my guess. And for Doctor Strange to outperform that, this movie so significantly, I was pretty surprised by that. It was not what I would have guessed coming into this thing. I thought this one almost stands alone more than the other branches of this universe, I think, in a lot of ways. I mean, it tied in really well to Avengers, tied in, you know, kind of in a fun way at the beginning of Thor, and all that. But otherwise, you absolutely could, if you only saw Avengers, Infinity War, and Endgame, and then these movies, you would have no problem, I think, sticking with, unless I'm 100% thing. I thought that they would be kind of immune to that, but it isn't. Yeah. It obviously isn't. So
I thought, the way they put out there that, yeah, this is pretty much the last time you're going to see these characters together. Uh-huh. And that was the point the entire time. I'm surprised there wasn't more support going out and like, I want to see the Guardians one last time, considering this is wrapping up a trilogy. It does feel like an end to a place in pop culture history for us for the last decade or so. And it really puts in perspective for me just how big Spider-Man is. Spider-Man in 2 years ago, No Way Home, made twice as much as this opening weekend, literally double, and made $1.9 billion at the end of the day. If this one gets to one, I think everyone would be very happy with that. But it puts in perspective, let's ride the Spider-Man train. Don't know if we have much left with Black Panther. It almost cracked 900 million, made a little bit less than Doctor Strange. Yeah, they got a lot of thinking to do, and we'll talk more about that at the end of the episode. But let's get into this movie. Man, I love this series, fellas. I remember one of my first memories of the podcast starting, we kind of looked forward to what's coming out for Marvel. And I remember this being in development and saying to you guys, yeah, it's a raccoon and a talking tree, but trust me, if they do it right, this could be really fun. And I feel like I've lived up to that prediction.
Sure.
I feel like they've gotten the most out of these characters. I feel like they've done it justice from what I expected it to be, and gotten the chemistry out of the team that I thought they could get. It certainly is some of the best writing in the MCU, some of the best direction in the MCU from James Gunn. There's a clear, distinct voice to that, so that makes it appealing. But what I liked the most about this was the fact that it was basically detached from the MCU. A few references here and there, but I think the movie boiled down to two words for me: save Rocket. Like, that was the plot of the movie. And it didn't really get much more complicated than that. I appreciated that. And I was in for the ride once that became clear that that's what we were doing. So that's my general thoughts. Of course, we'll get into more here, but want to toss it over to Brian for his general thoughts.
Yeah, man. To be honest, I loved this. I'm going to grade this very, very highly. And this is my favorite branch of this universe. I think
nice.
They're so fun. All of the characters, I think, are fun. All of them. They get more mileage out of like the 10th person, you know, in the crew than whatever Captain America movie does out of the third build actor. I mean, it's a really impressive collection of talent. And then, you know, I don't like anything that Gunn, I'm not like super anti anything, but there's nothing that he's done outside of this that I really love, but he really is kind of the perfect guy to be writing and directing these movies. And they're distilled so well, I think, through, you know, as much as crap as we want to give the Disney machine at times, I think there's some positives to having to go through Feige and stuff.
Especially with someone like Gunn. It's like actually a weirdly, ironically, now they're adversarial.
Sure.
At least in terms of business. I don't think there's any bad blood or anything that I know of. But like, it's like actually a perfect mix of like a filmmaker like Gunn who like is talented but stupidly goes over the line on a lot of stuff. Like, I'm not like offended by it. I just mean like it hurts the quality of his work sometimes to be so edgy in the Disney machine. And then the Disney machine, which plays it too safe, being pushed by James Gunn. It's like weirdly a perfect marriage. And now they're fighting it out.
Yeah, totally. But yeah, man, I love this movie and I love how this whole thing came together. And you get the sense that there was like a cohesive plan from start to finish. And I don't know that that's 100% true by any means, but it feels that way anyway. To stick the landing like this is really impressive. And I'm glad you said that, Kent, because like it feels like this trilogy and its crossovers into the rest of the MCU is like, I think it's very important to the MCU as a whole, but also it feels like a sort of important series in the history of this podcast. And obviously that's more important than the MCU, but it does. It feels like one of these like kind of Hallmark movies, really series, but that we have looked at over this last.
We've talked about from development to casting to everything, and now it's the trilogy's wrapping up. It is kind of bittersweet that way. Yeah,
sure. So I love this. Coop loved it. I was kind of a mess watching it at times, but in a good way. I love Rocket. Rocket is the best character in this whole series, I think. And for this to be kind of his movie is awesome. And I loved it. I had a wonderful time with it.
They actually got Bradley Cooper to show up and promote it at the premiere and acknowledge he was in it.
Yeah.
Vin, nowhere to be seen, though.
Too busy, bro. Man. Yeah, too busy. Yeah.
Richard, general thoughts on Guardians in this?
Love Guardians. I remember when we first started this podcast, I remember being in my old townhouse in beautiful scenic Bedford, Texas. Seems like 10 lifetimes ago. And Kent being excited for this. I'm sure Brian was too. I just remember Kent being excited for this. And me being like, what is going on? They're like being very confused by it. And not caring, wasn't like I knew James Gunn a bit and didn't care. This always represents the great surprise to me of the depth of Marvel properties. Seeing this and kind of instantly being, you know, it's a vibe from kind of minute one and going, oh, okay, this is a thing. This is a unique corner of this universe. At the time, the Avengers things was starting, but this felt separate and kind of punk rock and tangential and all this stuff. And I always think of this as one of those moments as someone who like, I don't follow comics, but like follows the film industry quite a bit, follows entertainment journalism, follows actors. and I kind of compulsively do it. I've separate, ironically, the last few years, even though I do this show, in my personal life, I'm not as obsessive as I once was, but like, you know, I'm someone that, you know, when I was 14, I used to just go on IMDb for 6 hours straight, just like click through stuff, you know. I have that weird brain, which is fine, whatever, it serves a purpose, but like I'm very rarely surprised by stuff is like the negative side effect of that. And so, you know, this was one of those where everyone's like, oh, this is a whole new thing. I was really excited by it. So this always represents that to me. The sequel, you kind of know what you're in for. It's during that whole era. Where is this going to, then you're more interested. How is this going to now connect to everything else we know about Marvel? And now this one is, how is this going to represent whatever or be separate again from whatever is next? So anyway, it's something that is actually a property I have a lot of. I'm the least of the comic book guy of the three of us, but it's actually a property I have a large affinity for tonally and just what it represents in terms of the surprise factor. Sorry, I've been talking about 20 minutes about that. But
I love it. Yeah, it's good.
But from what I remember about about Guardians 2, it's a good movie. I thought this one was better. But that one, it has kind of a weird amount of finality to it when it ends, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And then obviously you have the Avengers Infinity War and stuff like that, that kind of is a epilogue to it in a weird way. But like I had no idea where this would really even go, other than the stuff from the Thor movie. So it was kind of fun to go in again. Like I kind of knew, I don't know the plot of Quantumania, but I kind of knew what it was going to be and stuff. This one I was curious again, and it certainly lived up to that. It's a bummer that it didn't appeal to more of that. It's so interesting. I don't know. You know, it might be now the next phase of Marvel is just like you just go all in on Spider-Man and everything else you kind of hope supports that. I don't know what they do, but this I thought totally lived up to what I expect from a Guardians 3 and surpassed it in a lot of ways. And Sean Gunn and Bradley Cooper, that kind of combined performance was, I try to give Sean Gunn credit because I think he does a lot of obviously all the physicality. And I think that's a big part of that character. And Bradley Cooper's great as the voice. And that character is incredible. One of my favorite, maybe my favorite Marvel character. And it was such a great fun. I so didn't want to go see this too, because I'd been on the road all weekend and I'd work stuff and I went last night and so didn't want to be there. You know, those kind of moments where you're like, it's the last thing in the world I want to do. And then was, you know, completely happy to be there the entire run. So I really loved this. I thought it was great.
Mm-hmm.
And I can be kind of grumpy about Marvel. So, you know, that means a lot, hopefully coming from me, but I thought it was fantastic.
Yeah. I think this is the crowning achievement or the example that Marvel can show other directors, young directors, and say, this is the perfect example of a director coming in with an idea, pitching it to us, and executing that idea to, you know, finality or whatever, and it being a success and mattering in the grand scheme of things, right? Because he came in, you know, this Guardians of the Galaxy series, they're like, no. He's like, well, here's how it can work, you know, and here's how Thanos works in, and here's how Thanos works in with Tony Stark. And I think the way they played the weight of Gamora in the Avengers throughout and the way that ended was a stroke of genius, kept those characters important. Obviously, you have the comic relief of the other characters, but I think there's not a character in this that doesn't mean something to the group. There's no wasted energy here. I feel like there's no character. Yeah. I feel like that. Why is he hanging around? And I think that it reminiscent of Star Wars to me, honestly. I think the Guardians crew felt a lot like the Star Wars crew to me at the start.
For sure.
With the dynamic with Chewbacca, and you've got the droids, and you've got Leia, and you've got, Star-Lord, aka maybe Han, right, in this case. So, yeah, it's probably why I was attached to it from the start. But, yeah, this is such a great example of pitch, development, vision, execution. and then money at the end of the day, right? This was all, I feel like, Gunn's vision from the start. And credit to Gunn that he worked with. I'm sure there were compromises, right, along the way. But really, it felt like this one with volume three, with the way, you know, he was fired, brought back. We don't have to rehash all that. Mm-hmm. But it felt like he told them, hey, if you want more and more Guardians from me, this is what it's going to be. Okay. Mm-hmm. You know, and I don't give a crap about your Avengers Secret Wars movie in 2026 right. that you have to set up.
Sure.
I'm going to do my third Guardians movie.
Yeah,
and you can either take it or leave it. And they took it. And I thought it was awesome. And it felt like his vision. It did not feel corporate at all. It was doubled down on the emotion in a lot of areas. It was dark. It was funny. It was visually entertaining. It had some really deep cut needle drops, right, that you would expect from this. It felt like an appropriate send-off for a lot of characters. It set up, I think, characters to maybe go some other places in the MCU if they want to go that direction. But I thought just the idea that let's make this Rockets movie was, I mean, the ultimate stroke. I mean, he's maybe the most popular character in this. I think one of the most iconic characters in the last, I don't know, decade of blockbuster movies. I mean, I feel like he's on that Chewbacca level, honestly. Now it feels it's such a great achievement. And I mean, we care about a freaking raccoon, you know?
Yeah,
it's a cursing raccoon that we're all like crying about. And I think that's just an amazing achievement to make a garbage panda. Adorable, incredible character is amazing. And
for sure.
I mean, I know where I wanted this to go. I wanted them to do a Rocket and Groot movie. Maybe they do that eventually, but I am really glad we got to see the Rocket backstory because I was hoping to get into that eventually in some way. I'm glad they did it in this one.
Yeah.
Because that seeing that executed was everything I thought it could be with the emotional punch.
Yeah. And I think real fast aside here, because I don't want this to, I think we've gotten past the point where the MCU and DC thing has to be debated and redebated and brought up over and over and over again. I kind of think the Guardians are a little bit of a microcosm of, or just like this stands as a great example of how all of these, when you just like were in, I don't know, 2000 or 1995 or something, if you're just doing a draft of all the superhero characters in comic books and, you know, going from like, all right, who's got the highest visibility rating or Q rating or whatever. Yeah. Spider-Man would be in there for sure. Up at the top, and X-Men probably. Those are the ones that Marvel didn't have at their disposal, you know, at the beginning of all this. And for them, Richard has said this several times over. And so, I'm sort of rehashing what you've said, but I think this movie kind of brought it home full. If you're not a comic book reader, you probably knew who Thor was, but you may not have any. I didn't, and I think I'm pretty basic on this. I had no familiarity with it beyond God of Thunder, Hammer. Okay, cool. Captain America, got Shield. Awesome. All right, you know, maybe you know who Iron Man is. But there's so many characters within this universe that just had no real like mainstream cultural relevancy, and Guardians is so high on that list of like, I don't even know nothing about this. And to get us to, like you said, can't get to a place where we care so much about a talking raccoon that we did not know anything about 9 years ago.
Tree that says three words.
Yeah, I mean, it's a really impressive feat to be able to. I mean, like I said, you can say what you want about Marvel, and at this point, especially, like, yeah, it feels like a lot of them are kind of written by ChatGPT or whatever. And, you know, what work do most of the directors actually do? And all these sorts of things. Okay, I get it. It's fine. But, like, it's really impressive that they took all of these characters that mainstream American audiences knew nothing about and created all of this
absolutely.
And made it so successful
and blended it all together. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's an impressive feat. That, I don't know, that hit me as I was watching this movie of like, gosh, I freaking love this raccoon so much. And I had no idea. It's not like Batman or the X-Men or Spider-Man, like the characters that I grew up loving and like being, you know, sort of a mainstream thing. All of those characters were, this guy was, these characters were not. And there's a lot of them in this universe that fell into that camp, and they've made me care about them over the years. And that's, you know, that's impressive.
100%. I think this is one of the best Marvel series. I mean, I love X-Men too, which we're talking about in the VIP this mm-hmm. week, throwback to X2, 20th anniversary of that bad boy. So get excited, VIPs, for that. madaboutmoviespodcast.com/VIP for that conversation. I still think there's potential for X-Men to be something special if they do it correctly in MCU. Sure.
Obviously
haven't gone there, but
I think that really, and we need to go to the, we need to stay with the movie. I know. I do think that is probably the next, that,
yes.
I don't know that they're going to just take time
for 5 years
off.
And then first movie back is new X-Men.
Well, I expect, I mean, cause you're not going to get that. We know the next phase and all this sort of stuff, but X-Men I think is how they go dark in a like kind of a soft way mm-hmm. is we walk away from, all right, we do whatever happens with Kang, we do this whole thing with those Avengers movies, and who knows what that's going to look like. And and
say
then
what it's not going to look like.
Yeah.
Hear me out on this. I wanted to say this for the end, but since we're here. So this year, the next one they have coming out is The Marvels. Mm-hmm. And then next year they have Captain America, the new one with Anthony Mackie.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Harrison Ford's in that too. Yeah, right.
He's
yeah.
in Thunderbolts, I think.
Thunderbolts. Well, Thunderbolts? is 24
yeah.
as well.
Okay. Yeah, he's in that.
Yeah. And then Blade,
which is definitely getting pushed,
not in production. Yeah.
Yeah, they don't have anything on that yet.
I think they just cast the second lead this week. Yeah. So we'll see where that comes when that comes out. And then Fantastic Four. At the beginning of 2025, but then do they really have to do Avengers Kang Dynasty, Avengers Secret Wars, and then 4 untitled Marvel movies?
That's where I think X-Men starts to come in, and you let X-Men be at least like 90% its own thing.
Yeah.
For exactly. this to start with, you know. I mean, you can cross it over later, but
and then you work the blending it in as yeah. part of the nostalgia.
Right.
After enough times, but
right. Blade can be Fantastic kind of an origin Ford, story if, kind if of thing. So that. Can Fantastic Four. So can Thunderbolts.
Yeah. yeah.
Captain America can kind of play off the TV show that it just had. Mm-hmm. I mean, if Marvel came out this week and's like, you know what, guys, King bomb. Dynasty, Secret Wars, it's off, but trust us, it's going to be worth the wait. I would not be upset if they just completely
no, I agree.
Said,
I just
you
think,
know what?
I think
it ain't. It
Captain
ain't.
America as not Chris Evans. I know they had the show and all of the thing. I just feel like that one's the one that's just waiting to like really actually flop.
Hmm.
I think.
Yeah. Yeah. Could be
I just think
year of this.
Right. Universe. The random, you know, kind of 25% Marvel fan that just goes sees those is going to be so confused. Like, you know what I mean? They're
right.
they're totally sure. getting rid of the audience that hasn't seen one since event. I don't know. I just feel like that's the one where you're asking a little too much. Comic nuance from the audience for what they try to do.
We're going to try so hard to get Chris Evans involved in that somehow, some kind of cameo that they can tease in the trailer, something, some kind of hope that he's in it, right? That they can sell. I don't know. But yeah. All right. I think Radiohead's Creep is an extremely overused needle drop trailers, all that kind of stuff. But this acoustic version that they used was awesome.
Yeah, it was cool.
I think that was the cool. that was the touch it needed. Maybe the original version, I would have been like, "Oh, here we go again," you know.
Yeah.
But I think that
you're right. It is overused,
really
but it's also such an incredible song.
Great song. Yeah.
I think you get away.
It's like if you can use it correctly,
for the first time
it's
ever. Great. Yeah. I didn't realize it charted for the first time ever on Spotify this week.
Wow, it's crazy.
I did not look at
band
the
called Radiohead.
I talked about this in a couple weeks ago, but I did not look at the awesome mix volume 3 track listing because I felt like that would be a spoiler and I'm so glad same, I didn't same. Look because there were yeah. so many moments in the movie that I was so happy. The space hog use, I loved that. was an awesome moment when Star-Lord's listening to Space Hog as they're kind of flying down in their colorful suits. Yeah, it was greatness. And then the Florence note at the end.
Awesome.
Great song.
Yeah.
Great song.
Used perfectly, too. Like, that's not a song that I would have said is one of my 500 favorite songs, you know, coming in. But the usage rules. Like, that is the definition of a needle drop, I think, of, like, doing that effectively. Because that is a perfect song for that moment. And it has built so beautifully to that, I thought that ruled. That was a great. I would say the needle drops were a step below volume one, but well above volume two. And some of my volume one love may be built on the, like, man, that was so cool and kind of surprising, like you mentioned, Richard. And by now you're expecting it, you know.
Gunn said he had this narrowed down to 181 songs before making his final choices for this. I'm it's sure like he puts Robin probably playlist. So much thought into how this is going to set the tone, really. I mean, this is so important in these that he can't get it wrong. He probably maybe felt a little bit let down. He probably got some comments on the last one, like, not as good as the first one. He felt a lot of pressure with this one to make it great. I thought he did.
Yeah,
I thought he knocked it out of the park. And I love the use of the Zune in that. I'm sure the Zune nostalgia, the eBay sales for Zune are going nuts right now because of this movie. But I love the way he, you know, went full circle with that. To start Rocket out singing Creep and then have him end with that Florence song was such a nice emotional arc that really worked. I mean, you guys know me. I love Rocket Raccoon, the character. I've said that. But my favorite animal is an otter. I love otters. Cutest.
Otters are cool. Yeah.
And so it's like James Gunn came into my brain, said, we're going to give Kent the emotional punch of a lifetime and cast Linda Cardellini as this otter. That's his best friend, right? And it was just, it tore me up, man. It was perfectly done.
That otter is a harlot.
That's true, yeah. Screw that otter, honestly.
Yeah, I hate the otter. Yeah. According to Pegasus.
Kind of glad that otter died, to be honest.
Yeah, super.
She knows what she did.
Yeah, she knows what she did. She broke up Corinne Topanga.
They got back together. It's okay.
Well, still caused me a lot
still,
of heartbreak.
Doesn't matter.
Yeah.
1998, bro.
It's unfortunate I have to get
that
this
one day they broke up. I do. Never forget.
That's why I've never gone skiing since.
I loved the animals in this was
awesome.
Like, let's double down on the cuteness. Love that. And then the alternate Earth, whatever they call it.
Counter Earth.
Yeah. Both creepy and funny. I don't know what.
Yeah,
what
I was going
to
say great usage here for, we kind of already mentioned, but I think that the Gunn Feige partnership works really well. And I thought that showed in the visuals too, because it is creepy. It's a creepy world. But it wasn't overly creepy or like hard to look at so much, you know, right. Like I wasn't cringing while watching it. It felt like something that you would have seen it felt like an appropriate level of kind of common ground between.
Felt like an Earth in an alternate dimension, right?
Sure. Yeah.
Had that
bad
familiarity, but also different and creepy. I thought that was a great sequence. What was your favorite sequence in the film, Brian?
I thought the colored spacesuits thing was really funny and well done. The bit with the speaker of somebody mentioned this in the Discord, but I still think it's really funny when Star-Lord is kind of fish out of water, like doesn't understand things. Like they're all, you know, the whole, like, it's very intuitive that. That would be the color, and he's just like, what? You know, freaking out. But I thought that was really funny.
That was
dug
well-written.
That a lot. Yeah, that was great. That was maybe the funniest. But like Drax ruled in this movie too. I was really happy. He does. I felt like in two it kind of lost
way
a little bit.
Too slapsticky.
Yeah, I will say though, I went back and rewatched one and two last week, getting ready for this, and. I think I had gotten to a place where I didn't think two was that good, and I liked it more this time around than
good.
I had last time. I enjoyed it quite a bit. But yeah, Drax was perfect in this movie. P- pairing him with Mantis is really funny. I dig their the vibe that the two of them have and the kind of lovable idiots bit that they have going back and forth. So all those moments with Drax I thought were kind of second just to Rocket and his character arc and growth. And so yeah, all those were really well done. And on the other side of the, you know, not enjoyable but very well done, like the flashback sequences with Rocket were
the best.
So good. They were hard to watch. They were awful at times. Like I had to kind of do a vibe check with Coop before we went to see this, because, you know, like, I mean, and we'll say too, by the way, very check. Kind. All of the, I had so many people reach out, like, because we went to see this Saturday afternoon. I had so many people reach out, like, Thursday and Friday, who listen and know that Coop, like, really couldn't do Multiverse of Madness, and, like, just, hey, just a heads up, it's pretty dark. Like, it was very kind of everybody to reach out like that. But yeah,
his Hunter's got your number.
Great. Yeah.
That's a little.
Yeah, but yes, but I had to do kind of a vibe check with him of like, hey man, like, cause he loves animals so much. He's so kind of soft hearted on that stuff. And we're about to have to put our dog down. Like all these things are like kind of rough things. And I was like,
you told him that right before the movie started, right?
Yeah. I just broke it to him right then and there. Like, oh, right, let's go see the movie.
No, as lights were going down, he said, bring the dog to sleep.
Hey, by the way, just so you know. Yeah, brutal. Just brutal. But yeah, I had to kind of like check on him, like, all right, if you want to bail out of this, we can. It's cool. You know, I don't want you to feel like you have to go see this just because, but I want you to get that there's going to be animals that are, you know, that some of the characters might die and they're. Animals are going to be in peril and all that sort of stuff. And he handled it just fine. He was great. But like, those were dark. Those are really dark scenes. And I thought they handled them so well to the point to like get everything across and really build that.
This was my Saving Private Ryan on the animal front. You know,
I mean,
I watched all those guys lose their stomachs and stuff in that movie. And it was like, fine. But then
this you couldn't do.
Yeah. Thank God it was Linda Cardellini. That
I swear I got to a moment in the movie watching it. And I was like, I swear to God, James, if you kill this raccoon,
I'm never
going to. Thank God. I mean, I got scared.
Fails even worse under your watch.
Yes, I hope you fail.
Snyder comes in and re-edits every movie you make if you kill this raccoon. I stood up and screamed that in the theater.
Yeah,
I love that. I love the use of Cosmo finally too. Gosh, that can be great. Can we get like a live action Super Pets Marvel version with like Rocket, Groot, and Cosmo and all these animals together?
Yeah.
I need that.
The good girl bit was really funny. And they came back to that just enough to make it to where it didn't get.
That poker scene was great with Howard the Duck and Kraglin and all of them.
I love they always works out duck in these. It's hilarious.
Right. Yeah.
Howard the Duck.
Maria Balaklova, by the way, of Borat fame as Cosmo. Shout out to her.
Yeah.
Good bit. Gamora back. Good to see her. It felt like they had been away a while. Like it felt like an older Guardians. I think that was a lot on purpose, but it felt like an older, like they'd been out doing their space outlaw thing for a few years and they've seen a lot of crap. You know, I think that really came through that. It's probably time to end this in some capacity. Where do you want this to go from here, Brian? Do you wish some other director to come in and say, I have a take on Guardians. We need to keep it going. Should they not do Guardians? Maybe have a Star-Lord movie? We see that teased maybe in this?
That's what I'm thinking. They at least have that as an option to not.
Count me out on that.
I think Star-Lord pops up in Secret Wars. That seems to be the rumor, and that makes some sense.
We've done Star-Lord's life story already. I mean, are these guys continuing the adventure of Star-Lord?
I think if this series, this movie especially, shows anything regarding Star-Lord, it's that he wasn't the main character. And this is not a unique thought. James Gunn's been saying this for years, and then this movie, like, the Otter full-on says, like, you're the star of the, you know, this story's all about you. Like, this was all about Rocket the whole time, and Star-Lord was sort of playing an elevated B story in a way. And so I think that this movie proved that you could probably slide Star-Lord into another story and still have him be Star-Lord, doing Star-Lord stuff, you know, being kind of
Did he be Captain America?
Yeah, I mean, you could mix the whole thing of mixing comedy with action and competence with incompetence and things like that, I think could slide in and fit with a lot of the other segments or little branches of this universe if you want to do that. Because otherwise, I'm not saying no one else can do this series, but I'm not sure that I want anybody else to do that. You know, I think that Gunn has such an understanding, just really has his finger on the pulse of what makes this work. And I worry that doing this with doing Guardians 4 in 5 years or whatever with a different director, even directors that I like more, just, you know, on the whole, I worry that it comes off as sort of a knockoff of Guardians instead of feeling authentic like this does.
Just wait for the DC thing to fail.
Wait for everyone to hate Superman, and then he'll be like, guess what? I have the Guardians 4 script already done. Sup?
No, I'm sure he'll do good over there. Yeah, I mean, that's the most interesting thing they've done in a long time. I mean, but you do worry, back to our first point, it's like he's someone that works really well, I think, within having some bosses. And I don't know, now that he's the boss, maybe awesome. He's certainly talented. I mean, gosh, these scripts are pretty good, but and the direction's great, but I don't know. We've seen what he did before this. I remember when he got this. That was part of it. I was like, Kent was like excited for this because Kent was hip to it long before me. And was like, this is going to be good. And I was like, James Gunn?
Right.
I liked his movies at that point. I liked Slither. I liked Super.
See, and I'm not dissing you. I'm just saying I was not hip to that. I mean, I saw it. It didn't resonate with me.
Yeah.
This was the first movie of his, both Slither and Super, where I was like, oh, yeah, no, this is cool. But I wasn't cool. I thought he was a hack. So,
he broke Jenna Fisher's heart. So that's all it takes to become a hack.
I'm pro that, by the way. I'm Team Karen. Brian hates me for this. I'm Team Karen. So that's fine.
Oh, yeah, you are.
But
you just like to say a Karen, a Filippelli, so you feel more Italian.
But. Yeah, exactly. Was your dad a GI? But but you saw that part didn't bother me. But then 5 minutes into the first one, you go, oh no, this guy's good. He knows what he's doing here.
Mm. Yeah.
Yes. It's gonna be different without the Guardians and the MCU, but I think they'll find a place for certain characters. I think people want them still, and as James Gunn's days might be over, but I think their Guardians days are just starting, fellas. His Superman movie is called Superman Legacy, by the way. It's written. I think it's going to be starting to shoot. I don't know who's casting that. He hasn't announced anything.
Just Jeremy Renner.
I love James Gunn.
It's just like Born Legacy.
A Superman directed by James Gunn and not something I had on my bucket list of movies, wishes, but, you know, he might have a completely different vision than Guardians.
What if it's John Hamm and it's super old dark Superman.
And the perfect.
Now we're talking.
Yeah. That's what we've wanted for years. It's just retired, pissed off old Superman. The Logan of Superman with John Hamm. Yeah. That's what we need.
Yeah. It's not that hard. Yeah. Yes.
I really am interested in what he does with that.
I think that's
one of the biggest sins of the DC extended universe is just how bland and boring and sort of misunderstood Superman is and how bad that creation was from Snyder. And it's not going to be bland and boring, at least, you know, with guns. I'm really curious to see what he's going to do with that.
Curious and interested are the perfect words because I'm not certain it will be good.
Sure, same.
But I'm open and excited about it, you know, and interested in it. Because it could be awesome. But he's not one of those filmmakers that's like, oh, yeah, he's doing this and it's going to be awesome. But very well could be.
Yeah. My thing with Gunn at DC, and I've probably said this on the air before, is not writer director Gunn, like I have concerns about him as the Kevin Feige there, because his
for sure
his sensibilities are so weird and different. That works great for a film or a film series. It
right.
may not work so great for an entire cinematic and, universe that you're building. You know,
DC, which I think, knowing nothing, by the way, just my experience before this comic book boom of things, was like definitely had the cooler characters, but like leans kind of dark anyway. And I feel like that's where his sensibility goes. The cool thing about he and Marvel is Marvel has this kind of a little more clean cut comic, you know, origins. And so you throw the James Gunn energy on there and it's kind of the perfect mix. I worry about his mix on stuff because we've seen, you know, the DC stuff, you know, you've got mm-hmm. and all of a sudden you're in piss jar heaven and you're going, what am I doing here? I'm trying to sell toys.
Yeah, no, I totally agree.
One aspect of this I would have liked to see in this third one, I loved John C. Reilly and Glenn Close in the first one. Would have liked to see the Nova Corps, pop up again in this series. We need a Nova movie. I'm going to keep saying it. Need a Nova movie. It's been almost a decade since they teased that in Guardians. So we need Nova, Nova Corps, Nova Prime. All that needs to come back in some capacity.
Yeah, we need Glenn Close in the MCU, like in a lead.
Kind of sucks because I thought like Nathan Fillion would have made a great Nova, and they kind of used them in this in a different role. But yeah, we'll see where they go.
What do you think about Adam Warlock?
A little underutilized. It was fine, but I didn't feel like we got much out of that.
Yeah,
like much of personality or anything like that. And I'm not a huge Will Poulter guy in general, so
I just like his look. Just a cool looking dude.
Yeah, the character design was cool. I like the gold.
Yeah,
it's fun. Gold. It's fun to have him as an idiot too, and not super overpowered and whatnot. I think that
I thought the dynamic between Drax and Mantis was one of my favorite things in this movie too.
Same.
Mantis has become is the character that's grown on me the most throughout the series. She's awesome.
Kind of one note in the first movie and a half, and it's really has grown.
Mm-hmm.
For sure.
Yeah.
Well, I loved this. To me, this was far better than volume two. I thought it was way more consistent tonally with volume one and less just trying to do bits like volume two was doing. So very high on this. I'm going to give this one an A. What about you, Brian?
Yeah. We should mention too, one of the better villains in.
Oh yeah.
In oh yes. Whole great
run. Chuck Woody,
Shakespearean actor, Richard.
Yeah.
True stage presence actor.
He was incredible.
You don't have to go celebrity with these.
Totally. I think that's a great point for sure. Yeah. Like I love Kurt Russell playing Ego, but this was awesome too. And I mean, he's a better villain. And I think with a guy, with a character like the High Evolutionary, who I don't know anything about coming in, but there's a... Dolores Umbridge in the fifth Harry Potter book in the movie. One of the things that I think is
I hate that actress forever.
Yes, exactly.
My favorite character what makes in that series.
What makes that villain so great and diabolical and scary.
Cardolinian, I would say.
It kills Kent every time. Is that she, the character really believes what she's selling, and she believes that she is right in what she's doing. And I think that's the thing that comes through with this character too, is he's doing horrific, terrible, awful, like universally reviled awful things. And he believes that what he's doing is right and good, and that makes it so much scarier and more real and whatnot. So I thought he was magnificent. So
and the choice to call Raccoon the Raccoon by his code name too is just to demoralize him.
For sure.
Like you're not even a name, you're a number. I think that's a good
that's great
emotional choice.
It's really well
classic
done.
Classic. 90s movie villain move.
For sure. Yeah. Loved it. So anyway, I loved this movie. I mean, it's very rare at this point that I go see a movie and I'm like immediately like, gosh, I wish I had time to go see that again before we do the episode. It worked to me. It worked on every level. I think all of these characters got time to kind of shine a little bit without it feeling like a bloated mass of characters. And all right, now it's your turn. Now it's this. We got to get all these things in. For being 2.5 hours long, it felt like this is one of those that kind of earned, I think, the 2.5 hours, and appreciated that. Needle drops were great. Writing's great. It's a funny movie. All these things worked really well. And I was, yeah, it was very emotional watching the majority. It was especially the second half of the movie, and you know, very affecting in that way. So it's an A+ for me. I definitely top five, and I don't know, man. This might want to give it some time, maybe watch it again. But this first impression is this might be my number one Marvel movie. So want to give it some
time. Wow.
Yeah. Loved it. Really loved this.
Wow. 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 That's you buried the lead there. I didn't realize.
Let's go, baby.
I mean, I knew I dug it. I dug it too, but man, that's awesome. Yeah. That's a good take. Okay. I'm going to go, I would probably give this a solid A. 2.5 hours though. So A minus.
Got to knock it down at least.
I was, you know, the thing was that I dug it. I really dug it.
Yeah.
Couple watch checks, like, hey, I'm still in this room, you know? And so that, you know, I note those when I do it. Because sometimes you'll have something that's 2.5 and I don't check the watch once. I did do probably 2 watch checks in the last 25 minutes. And so I'm going to knock it down a half a letter grade. But it's certainly in this recent phase of Marvel, boy, definitely the best. But it's up there with the best, I think. It's up there with the Regonk. It's up there with Iron Man. It's up there with some of the Avengers stuff. So yeah. I you're right, Brian. I didn't want to see it. I'm not a psychopath. I didn't want to see it right away again like you did, because you know, like, I'm not a weird nerd, but I would like to see this again. I can't wait for it to be on VOD or Disney Plus or whatever.
Yeah, rewatchability on this one's gonna be high.
Will be too, yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
I know you like the Beastie Boys, Brian.
Oh yeah. That also added to the A+ there.
You guys, he said that they on Letterman that's gone super viral lately. It's
yeah,
on YouTube. And me and my wife watched
so
that.
So good to see that.
We've watched that like once a week for like the past 3 years, I swear.
Yeah. Check it out one. Oh, so good.
With the best late night performance ever.
Yeah. So good.
Here with their album, Ill Communication. They're dope, fat, and cool. I love Dave. He's the best.
So good.
The only bummer on that is they have a different keys player, because it would have been so sick to have Paul.
Yeah. Punk band BC Boys are the best.
For sure. Because later in the Dave game, Paul would just sit in with everybody, and that was a little early before, and that would have been sick if Paul just...
Have you heard the punk record they did, Brian?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
It's on Spotify now.
Nice.
Aglio e Olio is what it's called. It's just fast punk.
Yeah,
that's good.
Yeah.
Around the same time as
such a fun evolution of a band.
I think it's the year after. So cool. Yeah, year after Ill Communication, they just did a punk record. Yeah. It's like, this is fun.
It's really impressive.
Great band.
Gunn said he had no, I saw an interview with him. The guy asked him about trying to get all these songs for these 3 movies and how difficult it was and, you know, everything. And he said that the what's the band that Mr. Blue Sky, that one was the one that was the hardest one to get.
Yellow.
The guy was just like, yeah, he was just like, no, I'm not doing it. It took forever for him to get that. But all of these
Jeff
other
Lynn,
bands,
bro.
Yeah, there you go.
Gotta all, be bought.
Yeah, all these other bands that he's gone to since the first one, like Beastie Boys, he says, like, they'll give you the song for the movie, but they will never give the song for the soundtrack. And they're like, oh yeah, we love Guardians. Yeah.
I'm surprised Radiohead was so down, honestly.
Radiohead, same thing. And there was another one that he mentioned specifically of like, is notorious for not granting for movies. And they were like, oh, we love Guardians. Yeah, for sure. No problem. So
that's funny. That's good. I mean, I know it's not a budget thing because they got Led Zeppelin for Thor, and Led Zeppelin's like literally said notorious. No to every single thing they've ever been offered.
Must have money whipped them.
They just money whipped the crap out of them. It's like, hey,
this Thor trailer needs the immigrant song. It's too perfect. Yeah. So like, you know what? You're right. 50 mil
seeds for 6 weeks. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Grade, Richard, did you grade it?
A minus because of the 2.5, but
yeah,
but loved it. Can't wait to see it again.
All right. There it is. Guardians Volume 3. Hopefully we'll see more from the Guardians down the road.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin, or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
All right, let's hit a weekly recommend, fellas.
Weekly recommend.
What you got for us, Richard?
Yeah, mine's a show. Brian, you're going to love this. Up your alley. We were talking about it briefly earlier, but I don't know if you know this little nitpick or this little tidbit, not nitpick. So new show on Food Network called Chow House. Chow spelled C-I-A-O. It's a there's this Tuscan villa in Tuscany. Turns out that's where most of the Tuscan villas are.
You can't get a villa in Tuscany.
Yeah.
You can't get one. Don't even look.
You can't get one. Don't even look. And so it's a standard cooking show. It's Alex Guarnaschelli though. And this really handsome guy from Santa Monica. And, but here's the thing. It's good and the cooking's great and it's all Italian stuff and with their own twist on it. Not every chef is an Italian style cook, so that's cool. You get like Italian style jambalaya and all this stuff from the New Orleans chef. But Brian, dear Brian, they pick the villa on House Hunters International.
Oh, okay.
It's a crossover.
Now I'm in, baby. Yeah.
So the lead judge, the other guy that's not Alex Guarnaschelli, he goes over to Italy on House Hunters International. And he gets to look at three villas and he picks one. So that's
an incredible crossover idea. I'm kind of jealous. That's awesome.
It couldn't be more up your alley on both fronts, but it's actually an awesome cooking show too. I mean, you know, it's the Project Runway, the Top Chef, the formula, you know, the great reality show formula. The cooking's great, but yeah, you get to actually watch him be like, ah, this one's great, but the kitchen's in the basement. We can't have that. All that good stuff. So couldn't wait to share that with you.
That's awesome. I love it. I'm going to check that out for sure. What is it on? Sorry. I forgot.
Food Network is the Chow House. Okay. House Hunters International and HGTV is him picking the villa. I advise both. Right. But we'll just go with Chow House for now.
Love it. That's great.
What you got, Brian?
Recommend a book. Side recommend for Top Chef in season whatever it's in. It's been an awesome season. So we're getting pretty close to the finale here. It's in London.
I'm so far behind because I've been fasting at night. I've been eating like the one meal a day thing because I got super fat. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I can't watch Top Chef and not have food.
Yeah.
So like, I keep not watching. Yeah, I'm only seen like two episodes because I'm whatever.
It's been a really good season.
Like
London's a great setting. They've had some really cool challenges. Padma looks incredible. So there's that too. But I'm going to recommend a book. Yeah, Tom also looks incredible.
Yeah.
Love Tom. It's called Paraneezy by Susanna Clarke. It was 2 years ago. It was like a big fantasy sci-fi award winner book. It's a pretty short read. It's like less than 7 hours on Audible. Good audiobook too. I think it's Chiwetel Ejiofor is the reader, which is cool.
Like he's all right. Actor.
He's a pretty decent actor. It's kind of hard to describe without giving away the bit, but it's fantasy, but it's like kind of light fantasy. It's not like there's no dwarves singing or anything like that.
I don't have to learn a new religion to understand why one character doesn't like another.
Yeah. It's one character, Paraneezy, the lead character, and he is sort of he lives in what he describes as a house, but as it goes, you realize it's not just a house, like it's a much bigger area or landscape or whatever. He lives in this house by himself except for one companion and who he meets with for business meetings twice a week, and it's funny, but not, I mean, it's not like super laugh funny, but it's got some almost like Hitchhiker's Guide sensibilities to like the humor of it, I guess, just lightly on that front. Anyway, it's impossible to really describe without giving it away, but it's a short read and it's really well done. I enjoyed it quite a bit. I liked so much that I then went and got her last book that everybody was into, Jonathan Strange and Mr. Norrell, and I found that one to be kind of tedious and a little too long, but nice 7-hour quick read, good reader, definitely worth checking out. Parent Easy by Susanna Clark is the book.
There you go, the BGO book recommend. All right, I'm gonna recommend a movie, Hitchcock. This one's called Suspicion, and it's worth checking out. It's got Cary Grant, Joan Fontaine. And she won Best Actress for this one back in 1941. And it's about a couple who meet and fall in love. And the guy, played by Cary Grant, might not be what he seems. So just a little nice little thriller for you. Perfect 90-minute Hitchcock movie for you to check out if you haven't seen it. Almost 100 years old at this point. So it's about time you get around to it. Suspicion. Check it out.
Great movie.
All right. Nice. That's the main feed pod. We're going to dive into some X-Men talk here momentarily, though, for the VIP. So check that out. And we'll be back next week talking book club, the next chapter. Just kidding. I don't know what we'll be talking. Maybe Beau's Afraid.
80 for Brady.
Might get around to that.
Double feature, 80 for Brady book club.
Too. Yeah.
There we go.
Stay tuned for that next week. Who knows what will be in store.
Guarantee those movies won't be too long, because you might die during it. See ya.
Hey, baby, I hear the blues are calling. Toss salads and scrambled eggs. And maybe I seem a bit confused. Yeah, maybe, but I got you pegged. But I don't know what to do with those tossed salads and scrambled eggs. Calling again. Scrambled eggs all over my face.
They're making me ya ya. The salads and scrambled eggs.
They're calling again.